Okay, we'll start with our blessing. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam Asher bachar banu mikol hamim Ve'natan lanu et torato Baruch atah Adonai Noten ha-Torah. Happy Rosh Chodesh Adar. Today is Rosh Chodesh. It's a two-day Rosh Chodesh, today and tomorrow. So today is actually the 30th of Shvat, and tomorrow is the 1st of Adar. So when a Hebrew month has 30 days, the 30th day is day one of Rosh Chodesh, and then the first day of the new month is the second day of Rosh Chodesh. So this is a case where we have a double simcha of having Rosh Chodesh for 2 days, and that we're told in the Talmud, Mishenichnas Adar Marbin B'Simcha, that when Adar comes in, happiness and simcha increases, and that this is a time of great joy. So just a few things. We're going to talk about Adar first, and then go into our Parsha. And what I have to share with you about Adar is coming from a shir from Rabbi Zacharia Wallerstein, who's just wonderful. If you ever want to listen to him on Torah Anytime, .com. It's a great website. It has all sorts of speakers. TorahAnytime.com, and his name is Rabbi Zacharia Wallerstein. He created an organization called Or Nava, which is a center of Torah study for women, girls, women, people, all walks of life, but also oftentimes people who have had a lot of challenges in their life. He's very devoted to the Jewish women, and they have a fundraisers and. It's a wonderful organization that I'm happy to support. So first, as kind of a link between last week and this week, one of the things we ended up talking about was gemachs last time, I believe. We talked about acts of chesed and gemachs. So this organization, Or Nava, is having a fundraiser that they're doing kind of like a Chinese auction in New York, but they're doing it with a location as well, and the people who are the merchants for all the different things that are being auctioned off are going to have their goods displayed, so people can window shop and participate in the auction. There's kosher food, and it's going to be like a whole event. In anticipation of that, they did put out a magazine that has the prizes in it that you can bid on, but it also has articles about the people whose goods are being offered, and most of them are Jewish businesses, and has profiles about them and their businesses. So one of them I brought because I was totally unaware of this, and it's not like I think I'm like totally aware of everything, but I thought I would have heard of it before. There is a store, if you've ever been in stores in the Five Towns in New York, they have some other places called Junies. It's a women's clothing store. They sell clothes that are modest clothes. They also have clothes that are for girls and for women who are larger sizes, and it's very accommodating. So I didn't ever know that the person behind Junie is a woman named June, and she's from Syria. This is her picture down here. So she has a store called Junie. So they were interviewing her. Here's a better picture of her. I'll pass around afterwards. You can see her smiling face. She now has 8 different stores throughout on the East Coast, and they're very, very popular. But what was really, really interesting to me is that she has acts of chesed as a fundamental part of her business, way she does business. So get this. At the end of each season, June transfers every single item, only one season old, to her warehouse, where it's either donated to a gemach or sold for $5 to $10.
Oh, wow.
When she hears of a family whose home burned down, she immediately invites them to select a brand new wardrobe, not an outfit, a wardrobe. And during the hurricane, she dressed all of Seagate, the community that was destroyed.
Whoa.
And she is a major underwriter of this organization of Or Nava, as well as Chai Lifeline, Yachad, Kids of Courage, and numerous others. And she says that she feels that that what she does brings the bracha to her business, and that she is flourishing. You think, this doesn't sound like a good business plan. You take things that are only one season old, it's like, you know, give it away, gemach, sell cheaply for people who are very low income level, or when there's any kind of a tragedy, give everybody clothing. And so she says that she says to Rabbi Wallerstein, who's in charge of this organization, that what she says is, I'll take care of their clothing, you take care of their neshamas. But the truth is that she's taking care of her neshama also, because she does take care of people's neshamas, because our clothing that we wear, you know, especially women, feel very, it's very important, you know, how we feel when we wear things. And she says she takes particular pleasure when a girl comes in who's maybe on the heavier side and has difficulty finding clothes that fit to help. She helps her, because she said she's always been kind of on the more zoftic side, and she enjoys really helping people feel good in their clothing and girls to feel modest and dignified and beautiful. And like, that's your neshama also. So this is just a person in the Jewish community that is out there, and it's just like doing such amazing things. So since we had talked about Gemach last time, and then I came home and read this, I thought I wanted to share this with you. So anyway, if you ever have a chance to go to Junie's, go.
Did you say TorahAnytime.com?
Yes, mightme.org.
Okay.
It's either org or com.
Okay. And what was the background?
Wallerstein, Wallerstein. Zacharia Wallerstein.
What is it spelled, Gemach?
Gemach is an acronym for Gemilut Chasadim, and in English it's spelled G-E-M-A-C-H or G-apostrophe-M-A-C-H, because it's the Gimel of Gemilut and the Ch of Chasadim, Gemach. So that's what it is. I'm sorry, the Gimel Mem of Gemilut and the Ch of Chasadim, Gemilut Chasadim. Okay. So this is going on all over. Now, not everybody is able to do this, but it just shows what is going on out there amongst the Jewish people. And the fact that this isn't like, oh, one person, and so this is the person that's on the front page. Can you believe this? That this is not, I won't say completely standard and typical, but this is not out of the ordinary for what Jewish people are doing in this world. So it's just really, really, I think, very inspiring. Okay, so Rabbi Wallerstein. So this is all tied together with Rabbi Wallerstein, and this made me so happy. You know, and then I think about, with all of the insane things that are going on in the world, really thank God that this is going on too, because hopefully Hashem is seeing this and saying, okay, how are we weighing all of this out? And this should be in a merit for really all of the Jewish people. Okay, the month of Adar, increasing happiness. So one thing to know, to remember, is that the Jewish calendar, we often have a leap year. And when we have a leap year, there are two Adars. We have Adar Aleph, or Adar 1, and Adar Bet, Adar 2. When that happens, Adar 1 is the extra Adar. Adar 2 is really the real Adar. And this year is not a leap year. But in the times when there is a leap year, Purim is not in the first Adar, it's in the second Adar. We observe like an echo of Purim in the first Adar. We have like a little mini thing, which is a conversation for another year when we have that situation. But Purim is always in the second Adar, which is the real Adar. And the real Adar says we need to have Purim because it needs to be near Pesach. Okay, it needs to be 4 weeks from Pesach, so that we have the idea that redemption and redemption are linked together. So we have the month of Nisan, which is the beginning of the Jewish calendar, which is about God's revealed miracles and redemption of the Jewish people with everything that we've been studying up until now, with the Exodus and the plagues and splitting the sea, all of that which was completely revealed to anybody and everybody. Next to the redemption of the Jewish people from the threat of Haman, which was completely concealed redemption, because you know in the Megillah, God's name is not mentioned even one time. You could read that book and just read the book, the Megillah, and you could come away thinking just a very interesting, surprising, fortunate episode where political intrigue worked to our advantage. You could come to that conclusion. Except we all know that there's no such thing as chance, and that God's hand is working everywhere, and that redemption, we credit that to God. We don't say it was just Mordechai and Esther. Mordechai and Esther had their role, but it is God's saved us. So it said redemption has to be next to redemption. We have redemption that is hidden from us, Hester Panim, which is the hiding of God's face redemption, as well as Galui, which means to reveal God's face, so that we would have with Pesach, that those must be next to each other. So what's interesting is you would think that we would have this Misha Nichnas Nisan. When Nisan comes, we would increase our joy because we're coming into the month of Nisan of Pesach when God's miracles were completely obvious and apparent to everybody. Why do we say that happiness increases during the month of Adar when God's face and God's presence is hidden from view? So that's what we're going to talk about, is that there is a different kind of happiness when we see something, when we're looking for something and we find it. Because everybody knows that it's fun to look for something and it's fun to be surprised. Anytime we're expecting something good, we can be excited and thrilled and really anticipating, but there is a different kind of pleasure when there's a surprise. So I remember, and for those of you who have been learning together with me for long enough, that when we were meeting in the library, this was many, many years ago when our son was, he was in Israel post-high school. And he was planning, we thought his plans were that he was coming home, I don't remember, I think on Sunday or something. I don't remember what it was. Sunday from Israel. Except that he made plans to surprise me and surprise us by coming in on Thursday. And he came in at the end of our Parsha class. What was really funny, just as an aside, is everybody, there were a lot of people kind of talking, and Gabi Gottlieb, just so you know, Shadab, for her mother, Ilana Bat Lily is not well, and Gabi is in Chile with her. Gabi often comes up to me after class and like gives me a kiss on my head, you know, just like a quick kiss. So I'm sitting, and so I feel some, you know, I feel like some hands on my shoulders and a kiss on my head, and I don't look up. I'm like, oh, it's Gabi, you know. Except it was my son who had walked in, and he goes, Mom. You know, so like my joy was, the surprise took my happiness to a whole other level. It was just a few days earlier, but when he would have come home on a Sunday, I would have been, oh, Ben, it's so great to see you. You know, take your suitcase downstairs. I'll get you a snack. And it's excitement, but there is something about surprise that takes us to a whole other level. Purim, and the happiness of Purim, is the surprise of it all. That kind of a joy was like, wow, that's so exciting. And seeing Hashem's hands, like, oh, I was looking for Hashem's hand, and I found it. Just similarly to looking for the Afikoman. Everybody has lots of different traditions, but nobody has their tradition that the Afikoman is sitting on the table and it's just passed out at the end. Nobody has that tradition. Some people have the tradition that the parent hides it. Some people have the tradition that the kids steal it and hide it. But it always involves some sort of looking for it and searching, and it's not there, and you have to find it. So that element of it, and that's what keeps, that can keep kids up, you know, to late. Like, we're going to have looking for the Afikoman. That excitement builds a level of simcha and has the power to take simcha to a whole new level. So that is the task of the month of Adar. We're supposed to be looking for God's hand. We're supposed to see God in ordinary events. The sea is not going to be splitting. The plagues are not going to be happening. That was for then. So interesting, I couldn't say this, but Rabbi Wallerstein says this. The miracles that we have today, that we remain oblivious of, to whatever the preposition is, are more amazing than the splitting of the sea. So it's interesting, he says. One of the things we learn in the Midrashim is that when the sea split, that there were 12 channels, 12 tunnels for each of the different tribes. And it was a miracle that Reuven, his tribe, on one column one, could see through the columns all the way to Binyamin, to Benjamin, all the way at the other side. He could see from one side to the other. Isn't that a miracle? That is a miracle. Now we have another miracle called Skype. How far away was it from Reuven to Binyamin? Okay, you know, maybe, I don't know, 100 yards. I don't know what it was. However far it wasn't 5,000 miles or wherever the farthest reaches of the earth are that I can just go on my phone and say, hi, how are you? And I can see from one end of the world also. And we're told also that Adam, that when he was created, that he was so lofty, he had such amazing miracle, he could see from one end of the earth to the other. It's like, well, so can every single person on this planet can see from one end of the earth to the other. But now, it says that God's hand is hidden. It says God took himself out of the picture, not gone, but hid himself in the things that we use all the time, that we access, called nature, science, and technology. Except we take that all for granted.
So Rabbi, it was interesting, Rabbi Wallerstein also pointed this out, and I was thinking, I have to say, the exact same thing when we were coming back from Israel just after Hanukkah. It's like, okay, I am sitting in a plane. I've got food. I've got drinks. I've got a pillow and a blanket. And how high up in the air am I? How fast am I traveling? And then, you know, where it shows you, like, if you're really, really, really bored and you watch the airplane information. And I am hurtling through space. That me, because now I'm used to it, it's like, oh, 11 hours flight. Seriously? How long would it take to get there on a ship? How long did it take for people who walked, you know, from Europe from one place to the other? Like months, years, days, weeks, whatever it is. I'm like, oh, and they didn't even always get there. 11 hours. That's a miracle. And then it tells you it's 69 degrees, minus 69 degrees outside. He said, as if you were planning to go out for a stroll and like you should take gloves and a hat and, you know. It says, and you're sitting in a plane where it's, and then we'll say, oh, it was so hot on the flight, it was so cold on the flight. Well, it wasn't minus 69 degrees, okay? And in the heat of the sun, with the sun beating down on the plane, of what temperature it could be if you were baking in a metal contraption. And we're sitting there, and even if you are personally a little hot, you turn on your little air conditioner, little thingy on top of you. Seriously? What kind of a, this is miraculous. It's a complete miracle. Susan.
So when we think of miracles, we think God created miracles. Airplanes, sky technology are man-made.
God created them.
From God.
God created them. Gave people the ideas. First of all the raw materials that we need, whatever raw materials, that the metal was designed to be able to do that, to withstand.
Think of it as a miracle.
That's why it's all a miracle, because it's the event that's miraculous, and we just say, oh, technology, oh, science, oh, nature. It's like, that's God, if we choose to see it. If we don't choose to see it, we say, well, people have gotten really, really smart. It says, don't be so haughty. People aren't any smarter now than they ever were. So how come Abraham didn't have an airplane? It's like, well, because then God was working externally, and now God is working from within. And God is working through science, technology. It says we call the light of Mashiach is coming through technology. If we could see it, but we get so self-absorbed that we fail to give credit where credit is due. And we say, it sounds kind of strange, but we even understand there are what we call angels holding the wings of those planes up. Okay, now, this isn't like, oh, you are like really in fairyland. It's like, whatever those forces, we said God's messengers, whatever those are, we call those the laws of physics, which I always pray are still in operation when I get on the plane. And that God did decide to change it up a little bit. Okay, so that thrust lift thing, that has to be working all the time. It says, God created the laws of physics that makes all that work. That we can discover at a completely, increasingly rapid rate of what we can do with technology is only to bring the light of Mashiach to us so that we will be ready. So when Mashiach comes, you used to think, how will everyone know when Mashiach comes? How are we going to know? How do you think we're going to know? Just even given the technology today, how are we going to know? Going to get a text. Bing. Oh, okay. Before, you know, if you thought, you know, then the whole world will know the Mashiach is here. So if you were reading that, you know, 100 years ago, you would say, how's that going to happen? By the time the couriers get to whatever, it's going to, like, the thrill will be over. It's like, no, we're going to all know like that. We're going to know like that. So that the technology and all this is being given to us to, we're learning how to prolong life through medicine. We're learning how all sorts of the intricacies of the human body, all you have to read is every single month in the Hadassah magazine, there is some new miraculous medical breakthrough that allows us to do something, stem cell research, all these things. Like, where is this coming from? It's like God is downloading, probably at a faster and faster rate. But just think if God like dumped it all at one time, like it would blow our minds. We wouldn't even know what to do with it because we have to learn how to use it. It says, but this is all God. But if we don't choose to see it, we won't see it. And during the month of Adar, we're supposed to sharpen our focus. Same thing. You can look through the whole Megillah. You could say, what's the holiday? Okay, so we're happy we got saved, but God's not in that picture. It's like, well, who gave Esther those ideas that she had? Who gave Mordecai his this? Who set up the whole thing with Ahasuerus doing his thing?
like, where did that all come from? It's like, God is moving and shaping everything for us. We exercise our free will, and so we're partners in it, but we are supposed to be in the business of seeing God. So this was funny, and I actually had a personal experience with this as well. Rabbi Wallerstein was driving with a friend of his in Manhattan past huge, brand new, enormous apartment building. And the guy said to his friend, said to him, he goes, "What do you see?" He said, "Apartment buildings." He said, "No, what do you see?" "Big apartment buildings." This is like, "Oh, no, no, no." He goes, "Well, what do you see?" He said, "I see kitchens, hundreds and hundreds of kitchens," because he's in the kitchen business. So when he sees new buildings going up, he's like, "Ah, people are going to need kitchens." He says, "And if you were in the bathroom and plumbing, you would see bathrooms. And if you were in whatever business," so Rabbi Wallerstein said, I didn't know this about him also, he's in the bag business, okay? And aside from doing Ornava, he is a bag manufacturer. He makes bags for Barnes & Noble and, you know, various other stores. He says, so, he goes, "When you go into Barnes & Noble, what do you see when you go into Barnes & Noble?" "Books." "Because that's what you're there for. You're there for books. When I go into Barnes & Noble, I see bags." I'm like, how many bags are they going to need? This is a big Barnes & Noble. They're going to need a lot of bags. And I look at those bags. Do they have strings, or do they have, you know, drawstring, or do they have handles, or do they have a cutout handle and whatever? Is it big? Does it have a flat surface? Is it plastic? Is it paper? He goes, "Because I'm in the bag business. So when I go places, I see bags. Whatever business you're in, that's what you see." So I was walking with my son-in-law. This was a couple of years ago. We were in New York. And we were walking, I don't know where exactly we were, because I'm directionally challenged, but we were walking someplace in the city, and there was this, it was down by the river. Anyway, there was this huge, enormous building. It was like an old warehouse or something, I don't know. It gave me the creeps. It was enormous. And it reminded me of something like out of Charles Dickens or something, just like, it just gave me the creeps. And I said to my son-in-law, Michael, I said, "That building is so huge." He goes, "Yeah, think about how much rent they're getting for that." I'm like, "Seriously? That's what you're thinking?" He said, "What were you thinking?" I'm like, "How creepy it is. It looks so creepy." He goes, "Look how huge it is. And like, if it could be, you know, turned into whatever, and like how much rent they're going to get." Because he's an entrepreneur. He sees financial opportunities in everything. And I'm seeing like the how it feels to me, and I'm like, this looks like a place I wouldn't want to be, because I'm more into like, what does it feel like, and you know, do I want to be there? And like, I don't want to be there. He's like, how much money is going to be bringing in? Okay. When you're in the business of God, and you're looking for God's hand in everything, you see it. If you're in the business of other things, you won't see. It says Adar is the month we're supposed to be in the business of looking for God and seeing God's hand. So he gave one other example. This was kind of funny about the Super Bowl. So it was very risky. I didn't even see it, but I guess it was very risky having the Super Bowl in New York in the winter, right? Because, I mean, hello, you know? Okay, so it was risky, but they did it, and so everybody was, you know, I guess, davening. I don't know what they were doing. But the coach of the Seattle Seahawks, he said, is really a very spiritual person. Very, you know, holistic, that the guys, the football players do yoga, and they meditate, and they live very kind of like not your normal football kind of thing. But so he's very spiritual. So he was interviewed after they won, and they were talking about how amazing it was that the day before the Super Bowl, it had been, let's say, I forget what temperature it was, I don't know, below zero, and the day after the Super Bowl, there was 6 inches of snow, and on the Super Bowl day, it was 47 degrees, which, wow, I guess is ideal football weather, because when it's really cold, you get more injuries because everything is, and when it's hard on the players because they get overheated. But 47, I guess, is really perfect, perfect weather. So Rabbi Wallerstein was listening to an interview with him being interviewed about, like, you know, wasn't this like, what do you think about, what does that tell you? Like that there was like this gorgeous weather for the Super Bowl. And he was expecting to say, you know, like that God bless the Seattle Seahawks, you know, that God wanted a nice day for the Super Bowl. And he said instead, the power of the NFL. It's like, what? The power of the NFL. That's what led to that good weather. It's like, hello? You know, you're a spiritual person. Like, but he said his business is NFL. He may be a spiritual NFL person. He sees NFL in the end. It's all about football. So that's what he saw. Said he's like, he was saying, like, it was a miracle. You know, not, I don't know whether God cares about what the weather is for the Super Bowl, but the NFL did not cause the weather. God causes the weather. So it's just interesting. What we're looking for is exactly what we'll find. It says, this is the simcha, the surprise of, like, wow, this is really miraculous. So during this month, we're looking for God in all of the small places, in technology, of whatever we read, in situations in our own personal life, of saying, that was God. Even if somebody gives us an idea. I had last week, I was trying to get my grandmother's death certificate. And in order to do that, I had to have my mother's birth certificate, and I had to write a check and go to the Colorado Department of Health and, like, this whole big thing. And I was writing a check for something else the day after I had been to pay the check and try to get the death certificate. And all of a sudden, when I wrote that, I was writing the checks on the next day, I started to write February 2014. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if I did that yesterday, if I wrote February 2014 instead of 2015. So I'm like, I called the place, and I said, I wrote a check yesterday. Did I write it for 2015 or 14? They said, oh, we'll get it. No, 2014. And I said, can you just change it to 15? No, you have to come down and do it yourself and initial it. I'm like, okay, so I did that, and then he said, because if you don't and we submit it and your bank doesn't take it for some reason, then there'll be a fee that will charge you a fee. I'm like, I'm already paying a fee to get the death certificate. I don't need to pay a fee for the check that's done wrong. Anyway, I didn't want to take the chance. But I'm like, the idea popped into my head. So I could say, wow, the idea just popped into my head, instead of saying, Baruch Hashem, thank you, God, for putting the idea in my head to question what I had done yesterday. And I was only like this, random reason that I even was writing these other checks to even begin with, because I was supposed to be doing something else. But the whole string of events, like, didn't even make any sense. So credit God. Say, I may not see you, but this is you. Thank you, I see you. These are the taps on the shoulder that we're supposed to be looking for. It says, this is the simplest. Like, I found you, I looked, and I found you. It wasn't just at Purim. It says the entire month of Adar is for us every year. We're supposed to heighten our awareness. And the benefit is the more that we look and see, the more we'll be given opportunities to look and see and to find. And that is what will increase our joy. And then in the end, it will lead right into the revealed redemption, which is Pesach. So Adar, the Adar approach, always leads to the visible manifestation, the visible redemption of Pesach. Susan.
Why wouldn't we do that every month?
That's a very good question. We should. We should be doing it all the time. Really, all of the Jewish holidays and all of the Jewish everything is going on all the time. We just bring one forward each month to focus on, to give us a 30-day opportunity for intensive focus, which is also interesting, which is a good point, is we don't say Mishanichnas Purim, Marbim Besimcha, that when Purim comes, we're extra happy. We're talking about the entire month of Adar. Purim is only one day out of that whole month. So why are we making such a big deal about the entire month? It says the whole month is about looking and seeing God's hand. That hopefully after a 30-day process, it gets ingrained in us more and more, so that then we can have the rest of the year have that heightened awareness and be able to see it more frequently, and that we're supposed to look for it. People understand and know that when they go to Israel, they see this. It's more revealed there than it is here. We also understand that part of being in exile is the curtain being drawn and being a little bit denser so that we don't see things. And even if we're living in the land of Israel, we are, the Jewish people are in exile, and so we don't see things so easily. We're told that in the temple, that when the temple stood, that God's presence was manifested. Everybody saw clearly God's presence and God's hand in everything. It was just obvious.
And that it wasn't that you didn't have to be a prophet to see it. You didn't have to be at some amazing level that everybody saw. And so that's where we're trying to get ourselves to. And that is the source of our simcha, is to be looking for that. So God willing, you know, you can read an article about, you know, some medical advance. And instead of saying, wow, they're really smart, or this is a great technology, say, thank God, like, thank you, God, for giving them that idea, the ability to do the research, whatever it is, that it's really God giving it to us. Those ideas are all coming from God. Okay. Interesting, just as an aside, there's a special Tefillat HaDerech, which I didn't know. There's a special prayer, a traveler's prayer for going on an airplane. Because an airplane is unique in everything that is required for it to go smoothly. I don't know. I haven't found it. I'm going to Google it and see. But there's a special one, but it talks about the angels beneath its wings. Literally. Okay. It's holding you up. It's like, it's unbelievable. Susan.
Two things. First of all, whenever I'm on an airplane, I say the Shema and I take off, and I visualize hands under the wings.
You are such a tzaddik. You're right.
And it works.
Oh, yes. Baruch Hashem.
The other thing is that I read this thing once that about the danger of worshiping nature.
Yes.
That we have a tendency to want to worship nature instead of worshiping the Creator.
That is true. Mm-hmm. That's true. Like, you'll hear people, first of all, you'll hear people talk about Mother Nature. They're, like, very enamored with Mother Nature. It's like, it's not Mother Nature. I mean, it's nature created by God. God did it.
Or that people, to go out and be in nature, you know,
right.
Finding that as spiritual. I mean, they might.
Yes, and that's fine too,
yeah.
As long as we connect the dots. We just need to connect the dots. So, you know, when you have little kids talking about connecting the dots, if you have a connect the dot design for very small children, the dots are either very few dots or they're very close together, so you like can't possibly miss. Like, you can basically, like, it's practically already done. And then the ones that are more complicated, either the dots, there are more of them, or they're farther away, so you can't quite find it so easily. It's like, our connect the dots is like, it's sometimes hard. Even going back to the Purim story, we read it as a Megillah, as an event. It was over a period, I believe, of 10 years. So you wouldn't necessarily say, oh, this happened here, 5 years later, this happens. That happens, like, oh, I see. So we say hindsight is 20/20, but we don't need to have hindsight.
Except that, you know, Mordechai and Esther talk about, before she's going to, she talks about, you need to fast for me, and you need to pray for me. And so, I mean, those two in particular, and the rest of the Jewish people definitely saw the need to pray.
Oh, for sure.
To God.
Yes. Yes. Oh, for sure they did. So that was, in fact, they had a big, the Jewish people had a big spiritual elevation at the time of Purim, bless you, as they reaccepted Torah at a higher level than they did at Mount Sinai. So yes, they were praying. I mean, they did see that God was involved in this. They did see it. But you wouldn't have seen the events leading up to that.
The dots.
You would not have connected the dots. Vashti's being deposed. The Jews having gone to the banquet of Ahasuerus, you wouldn't have connected all those dots. But yeah, they do connect the dots, and then they see that. And still, you can pray and daven to be saved in the moment without necessarily realizing that your behavior may have gotten you into the situation that you're in.
Yes.
Help me, help me! I'm always like, well, how did you get here to begin with? I mean, that question has to be asked also, so they could see the whole thing. Or that we could even say that Haman was the best thing that ever happened to the Jewish people, that it wasn't until we were under that complete threat of annihilation that the assimilation stopped. Okay, so we could have just disappeared. So he saved us. So putting that also, of recognizing even things that look so bad and terrible, it's like, what is God doing to help us? And knowing that God is actually always trying to help us. If we would pay attention. So thank you, Medina. That's a very good point.
Look who Vashti was. She was the daughter or the granddaughter?
Granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar, of the king.
I mean, she was like royalty.
She was royalty, and she was evil. She was evil royalty. So yeah, she was evil royalty. So, and the other, so the two queens in that story are Esther and Vashti. They are the ones who are the real royalty. The other people are wannabes. So as far as Ahasuerus and Haman. Okay. One other point that we things that we take for granted. Oh, this was a story about Rabbi Miller. Rabbi Avigdor Miller says that he was out walking and he was in the city, and all of a sudden the rain was, it started, it just like a downpour. And so his students were trying to say, oh, you know, we need to get you out of the rain, let's go out. And he goes, no, I can be in the rain. It's like, what's the problem? This rain is beautiful. It's like, no, she's getting all wet, you know, everything. And he's an older man. No, the rain is good. He said, what do you see? They said, rain. He says, what do you see? He said, I see tomatoes, avocados, bananas, flowers, grass, trees. The rain is what makes everything grow. Who am I to not want to just luxuriate in this tremendous bracha of rain? I'm happy. We'll get inside when we get inside. They're like, okay. So I don't know. But to have that perspective, it's like we're like, ah. So, but even the natural things that are going on, is do we see the blessing? Do we see the hand of God in that? Okay. So that is our opportunity. The final piece is recognizing the God's hand in the simplest of things. So when we make a bracha, for example, on food or even on water, that we're supposed to have in mind the similarity that, and I think it was the Chofetz Chaim who went into a restaurant. No, I'm sorry, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He went into a coffee shop, a very nice, nice coffee shop, and he asked how much the coffee was. And at that time, it was $3. For us, that's like a bargain, okay? But at that time, it was like, that was expensive. This was like saying like $9, okay? $9 or $10 for a cup of coffee. Or if you go to a hotel, right? If you go to a hotel and you want room service or whatever, how much you pay for coffee? Like $9, okay? Or for a bagel. So said, like, it's only like water and coffee. Like, how can you charge so much? He says, well, it's not just that. It's for the whole experience. You know, you're eating it here in this beautiful restaurant. You're having the service. And it's, you know, the whole environment and the nice cup and the dishes and the staff and everything. That's all going into what the cost is of the coffee. He said from that time on, he realized that his brachas over food had really been lacking. He was just saying, thank you for, like, the water. Thank you, God, for the water. Or for the apple, but not a sense of like, oh, and look at this beautiful restaurant, and look at this hotel that we are in. We are in a beautiful hotel. We've got grass, we've got flowers, we've got trees, we've got a blue sky, the beautiful sun. We have, I mean, even just the way the food looks, it's colorful, it's fragrant. It's like, we've got a whole experience here. This blessing, what we're saying thank you for, is much bigger than we can possibly imagine. And we tend to think of things like not being so fancy because we get used to them. So this is kind of funny. Our Machatanim have a condominium in Florida. They live in Manhattan. So our daughter and her husband and their daughter Laura were down visiting her in-laws. And my son-in-law has a sister. And she and her husband and their kids came down to visit, who are the grandparents also. But the little kids who are the nieces and nephews are like 6 and 4 and 1. So the 6-year-old and the 4-year-old, they call this condo Grammy and Poppy's Hotel because that's what it looks like to them. It's a hotel, you know. For them, it's already like our other house, and we have to pay the bills and do the dishes and do everything because it's not their apartment that they have in Manhattan. So this must be a hotel. It's like, this must be a hotel. It's like, we're in a hotel. We're in a 5-star hotel, and we're being given all of this glorious food to eat, and this is amazing and such a beautiful gift. And look and see what God is doing for us. So that our brachas should reflect our awareness that we are receiving something as great as just the thing is. the environment in which we are receiving it takes it to the highest levels. That should fill a person with tremendous simcha. Because people like to go out. Why do people like to go out? Because people sometimes say they'll go out to a nice restaurant and say, well, I could have made that at home. It's like, yeah, but you didn't, okay? So you didn't have to, you got to sit in this luxurious environment and have this gift, and we pay for that. So we pay for the privilege of being in God's world through our bracha, which is the payment, which is just recognize I'm here doing this for you and wake up. And that should fill us with tremendous simcha. So God willing, we can use that during the month of Adar and see God hidden in that month of Adar. Okay. One idea from the Parsha is also very beautiful that I heard from, I don't know if I can even pronounce his name, Rabbi Yossi Zakatinsky. And he is talking about one idea about the Parsha of Truma, which is on page 445. And let's just read the opening two lines here, the first two verses. Okay. Valerie.
Hashem spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, and let them take from me a portion. For every man whose heart motivates him, you shall take my portion.
Okay. So this is a portion for the building of the Mishkan, the building of the portable sanctuary, which is going to take up the next number of parshas, a very significant part of the book of Shmot. So first of all, a little background. There is significant opinion that says that these sections of the Torah are not written in chronological order, that the commandment to build the Mishkan came after the sin of the golden calf, so that it went Yitro Mishpatim, standing at Sinai, getting the laws of Mishpatim. And then, because at the end of Mishpatim, we saw that Moshe goes up to Har Sinai to get the tablets, and then we're like on pause. Ki Tisa, which is a number of parshas later, is when he is delayed in coming down, and the people build the golden calf. It says, and then, as a tikkun, as a repair, God gives the commandment to build the Mishkan. So we want to ask two questions. One is, what happened with the sin of the golden calf? And how is the Mishkan an atonement for that? Because we understand that the Mishkan is an atonement for the golden calf. So let's just for a moment go to Ki Tisa, and we're going to take a look at the language of how the people get completely off track here. So turn to page 493. So you see it's a number of parshas later. Chapter 32, and we're going to go on to the next page also, and we just want to read verses 1 and 2 here. Okay? Rachel.
The people saw that Moses had delayed in descending the mountain, and the people gathered around Aaron and said to him, rise up, make for us gods that will go before us, for this man Moses who brought us up from Egypt, we do not know what came of him.
Okay. What does their concern appear to be?
Moses won't come back.
Moses isn't coming back. Okay. We don't know what became of him. And they call him this man Moses. So it's clear they're not worshiping him. They don't call him a god, this god Moshe. They call him this man Moshe. But using this word, this man, Moshe Ha'ish, in the Hebrew it's different. Moshe Ha'ish, the man Asher He'elanu, that brought us up from the land of Egypt. So, this rabbi points out that the challenge of what happened here is that the Jewish people thought that it was in the merit of Moshe that they were taken out of the land of Egypt. Because we know they were on the 49th level of spiritual darkness, and that they worked very hard for the 49 days between leaving Egypt and getting to Mount Sinai and getting the Torah. But basically, if you want to talk about it, if you were talking about anybody, and if 50 days ago you were a slave, you can't say that you have quite a lot of distance from your past. Okay? 50 days is nothing. So they are saying, basically, now it's like 90 days. Okay, so 90 days. That's still not a long way away from having been slaves. The way they see themselves is that they don't have any merit. They don't really have anything, and it was in Moshe's merit that he was the one, He'elanu. He is the one who elevated us out of Egypt. It was based on him, and if he's not here, we don't really have the merit to go forward, to go into the land of Israel and to merit that, to deserve that. We need something that's going to give us merit. So we don't have anything except we do have gold. Okay, so gold, that's valuable. So if I don't think that I'm anything, at least I have some things that are really, really precious. So I have gold. Let's put that all together into the combined, if you want to call it the combined merit of the Jewish people in the form of gold, and we'll make that into a thing that will, in the merit of that, then we'll have something that can elevate us and lead us into the land of Israel. And that was what they did. And their sin was thinking that they did not have merit. And that they had nothing to contribute other than gold, something that was only fine and rich and wealthy and meant a lot, that instead of themselves. So now we're going to go back and look now back to our Parsha and Truma of those opening lines. So if God has to give a message to the Jewish people, and that message is, you are a holy nation to me. You have exactly what I need and what I want, and I want a donation from what you have to contribute. You do not need to be Moshe in order to be a great person, to be a tzaddik, to be a righteous person. That's a huge, fatal error to think that there are only some people who are the tzaddikim, the righteous people, the worthy people, and everybody else is a nothing. That, especially thinking that about ourselves. So what is the command? Speak to the children of Israel and let them take from me a portion. From every man whose heart motivates him, you shall take my portion. So what became important is that it had to be a feeling from within the person to say, I have something to give. This wasn't like the shekel where you must give this amount. That's a fee. Okay? This is, do you see that you have something within you to give? That's what I want you to give. And this Mishkan here was specifically designed to need supplies at every level. Because what did some people give? So let's take a look and see what did people give. People are different. People do have different things that they can contribute here. Vera, would you like to read verses 3-7?
This is the portion that you shall take from them: gold, silver, and copper, and turquoise, purple, and scarlet wool, linen and goat hair, red dyed ram skins, tahash skins, acacia wood, oil for illumination, spices for anointment, oil, and the aromatic incense, shofar stones, and stones for the settings, for the ephod, and the breastplate.
Okay. Great. What do you notice about that list of things? What's the range of specialness?
Very expensive to...
Very inexpensive.
Common day everything.
Here's some goat hair.
Yeah.
You know, what's that? You could say, well, it couldn't possibly be that the Mishkan, which is the dwelling place where I will experience God in me, not Moshe only, everybody, it couldn't possibly be that they need some goat hair. It couldn't possibly be that they just need some wood. It's like, yes, they do. We need everything. We need everything and everybody. And everybody needed to feel that was the repair. That was the tikkun of the golden calf. You thought it was about Moshe and that his greatness is what it was in his merit. That's not true. It is all of you, and I need all of you, and the Mishkan is going to be a project that makes that crystal clear because everyone is going to give. In fact, everyone gave so much they had too much. But everyone could give, like, here's my goat hair. I mean, I'm not sure what level that person would be, but whatever that is, you know, I can fold envelopes, you know, I can fold towels, or I can, you know, I can address envelopes. Whatever it is that is us, that is what we are supposed to give. This idea is also conveyed, interestingly, in the acacia wood. The acacia wood, which is called Atzei Shittim. Atzei Shittim, Atzei means trees, Shittim is acacia. It was acacia wood. Interestingly, it says, where did acacia wood come from? And these were huge beams, like the height of a whole tree. Okay, it's like, where did that come from? It said, Yaakov planted it in Egypt. It says that he knew that they were going to need acacia wood for the future. It's like, well, if you knew that, how about mining some gold also? You know, how come that was the only thing he prepared? He only prepared acacia wood. And in fact, they needed it, and the Jewish people took it out, they cut it down, and they took it out with them, and they carried it for the Mishkan. Now, the acacia wood
not only was an ingredient or part of what was necessary, the materials, it was what held the whole thing up. If they didn't have the acacia wood beams, there could be no Mishkan. You can have all the gold and silver and copper and beautiful things, but if you have no structure to hold the thing up, you have nothing. So the acacia wood was the most important thing, and yet you wouldn't say, you know, I'm bringing the wood. Okay, so that is the foundation. Interestingly as well, if you turn to page 454, actually, page 455, yes.
So, like, the people that gave gold here, was that because they were stingy or because they were poor?
It may have been that they were poor, that's all they had.
Okay, so then here's my next question. Before they left Egypt, they took all the gold and treasures from Egypt.
Yes.
Was that not divided equally?
Not necessarily. It may have been it was like whoever got whatever they got. You know, maybe, you know, it's like when, when they throw candy, there's always some kid that has like a whole armful and then one kid who decides I didn't get, you know, because people were, you know.
It just seems unfair because it was the plague of darkness.
Yeah. And people went to ask their neighbors and they saw, and then they, at that time, they were able to see where the jewels and everything were. And then before they left Egypt, after the plague of darkness in the morning, they went to go get the jewels. But maybe some neighbors didn't have. You know, they went to ask, but maybe someone only had a small amount. Not everybody had a whole lot. But no, it wasn't divided equally. It was like whoever got. But it's also they didn't need it. It wasn't like they had to pay rent, go to the store, go to Costco. I mean, they were, you know, they were being totally taken care of. So some people had more, some people had less. But whatever they had, and someone may have given goat hair and something else. But it just shows us the range of what was needed in order to build the Mishkan. And then specifically on these Atzei Shittim. So if you look on verse 15... on page 455, that it specifically says, you shall make the planks of the tabernacle of acacia wood standing erect. Okay? Atzei Shittim, and it says Omdim, standing erect. Now, the question is always, why do we need to know that the acacia wood should be standing erect? If you're using wood to build the planks, and we're told that there's supposed to be planks like this, why do I need to know that they're supposed to be standing up? I already know that it is supposed to be standing up because that's the structure of the building. Okay, it's not like it's like a package where like or something where it's obvious, like on sunshades for a car where it says "Do not drive with these in place." It's like right. I knew that. Okay, so I'd say she team other things that you'd like some more information. They don't tell you like how am I supposed to use this, but that they tell you. Okay, so I'd say she team Omdim. I don't need to know that they're supposed to be standing straight up. But what we learn is it doesn't mean just standing straight up. They needed to be stood up in the way that they grew. The grain needed to be that the bottom needed to be what was the bottom of the tree, and the top needed to be what was at the top of the tree. It had to be the way they naturally grew. That was how they had to be placed. That's what Omdim meant. Not that they were supposed to be vertical. Because vertical was obvious, even to someone who hadn't been to, you know, Home Depot or Lowe's or anything. Like, okay, I know that. So Omdim meant standing the way in which they grew, and that was a message to say that they came from Egypt. It says that these Atzei Shittim Omdim represent the Jewish people who grew in Egypt. And you don't need to be in denial of your past and of what you were in order to contribute significantly to something holy. You don't need to say, oh, like, I never did that, or yes, my past is a little not so happy with this. Like, you bring yourself. You bring yourself and your natural way of being, who you are. You don't need to be Moshe Rabbeinu. You need to be who you are in this world, and you are the plank that we need to hold up the Mishkan. So that is the message of telling us that it had to be Omdim, that the way they grew. To not be in denial of the past, and the acacia was very strong. It says a person who's kind of been bumped and bruised through life, it's just like a bone that has been broken, that it's a strong point in there. Often that's a place where it grows, a place of strength. And somebody has had a weakness that they've fallen on, that's a place where they can be extremely extra careful to not fall in that way again. So it says everything that we are, how we grew up as slaves, specifically, what did Yaakov know? So of course, that doesn't make any sense. So buy wood from somebody else. You're going to schlep these huge trees, you know, through the desert. Go get wood from someone else. It says, no, you needed to know that you're taking yourself, because a person is also compared to a tree. circumstances, that we are like trees. We need to know that we are like that, and we had that experience. We grew up in slavery, and we're taking ourselves as slaves. Don't you think that it was Moshe, who was the prince, the king of the Jewish people, that only he is the one who has the holiness to be able to elevate? You have the holiness inside you. You need to work with what you have and who you are, and you are the structure of the holiness of the Beit HaMikdash. That is why the Mishkan is an antidote and a repair of the mistaken philosophy that led to the golden calf. This is also fits in with the month of Adar, when we see that we have an ordinary person. Esther was an ordinary person, and yet she used what she had and her own ideas, her own talent, her own initiative to create salvation for the Jewish people. It says all of us are exactly the same. That's what we're supposed to bring to the table, is who we are. And it's not just who we are right now, but who we have been in the past, that we don't need to be in denial of that. There was a story about a man who, in a small town, he was approached by an orphan who was starving to death, and he needed money. And so this man took it upon himself to raise money, and he went around to all the townspeople to collect money for this orphan, and he got some, but he didn't get enough. But so he decided he was really desperate. So he walked past a bar that was not the Jewish bar and not with some such savory people in it. And he went in to see if maybe someone would give him some money. He would collect tzedakah, and he would sacrifice his own honor for that. So he went in, and the townspeople kind of started playing with him in a not so nice way. And they said, if you dance for us, we'll give you some coins. So he said, okay, fine. So he danced, and they gave him some coins. And they said, we'll give you all the money you need if tomorrow there's going to be one of the Catholic festivals, there was going to be a parade. He said, if you'll be in the float, if you'll be part of the parade, and wear the outfit of a priest. And so he said, I'll do it. So he said, what could be worse than for this Jewish man dressed as a priest in this Catholic parade celebrating the church and Jesus and all this other things? He says, but he needed the money for this person. So he got the outfit, and he wore it, and they gave him the money, and he gave it to the orphan and saved his life. So, but he was so disgusted that he did that, he took the clothes that he was wearing and just threw them in the bottom of his closet. He just didn't want to have anything to do with them. And he didn't want to take them out because he wanted anyone to see that he had done that, the whole thing. So years later, a rabbi who had a very strong spiritual awareness was driving with his gabbai, with his assistant, and he was passing by this town on the road to this town, and he said, go this way, I smell the Garden of Eden. He says, okay. So he went that way, and he goes using his nose as a divining rod, no, over this way. He gets to this man's house, and he gets out, and he said, I'm Rabbi whoever, and I smell the Garden of Eden coming from your house. He goes, here? He says, yeah, can I come in? He's okay. So he goes, he says, it's coming from this room. He goes, actually, it's in this closet. Is it okay if I go into your closet? And so he knew what was in that closet were the clothes of him, the priest's clothes. And he said, I'm not sure you're going to be so happy with what you see when you go in the closet, but okay, if you're saying this Garden of Eden smell. So he goes in and he pulls out the clothes, and of course the rabbi's a little surprised to see the outfit of a priest. He's like, do you have an explanation for this? So he told him what had happened. And the rabbi said, these clothes are precious clothes. He says, in fact, when you die, I want you to put in your will, you are not to be buried in the regular shrouds, you are to be buried in these clothes. These clothes are your ticket to Gan Eden. So what you did, and to sacrifice your honor, you took it as something I can't believe I did that, it was so horrible. This was an incredible gift of yourself that you gave to this person and saved his life. So sometimes we look at the things we've done and we don't even know how much beauty might lie in an act that we did if it was for somebody else, and how that is really quite redeeming. So God willing, we can look at ourselves and know that we, each of us, is a plank. Each of us is an Atzei Shitim Omdim, that we are a plank, stands just how we grew. We don't have to go through any contortions and pretend to be who we're not. That the world only had one Moshe Rabbeinu, and there are plenty of other people here, which means God needs everybody else as well. The rest of it is not garbage. Okay, so this is who we are. We're meant to see ourselves and discover the godliness that we have within ourselves to contribute the holiness. And the goat hair, so they couldn't have built the
one of the tents over the Mishkan was olive goat hair. So it was required. You couldn't say, well, goat hair's kind of tacky, let's not have that. It's like goat hair was as much a part of the Mishkan as the silver and the gold and the copper and everything else, that all of us have a place in that Mishkan. God willing, we'll be able to find ourselves and see it and grow. Thank you. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
And Chodesh Tov.